And good morning. It is 16 minutes after 8 a.m. You're tuned to Raven Radio, your community radio station. And joining me in the studio is Debbie Miller, Alaskan author, here with a new book. She has a new children's book, A King Salmon's Journey. She'll be speaking at Kittleson Library this Sunday at 2 p.m. Welcome to Morning Edition, Debbie.
Good morning, Melissa. Great to be here.
Well, let's talk a bit about this new children's book of yours. You have quite a few kids' books under your belt, about 14, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
How is this one different?
This one, I think, is a special one because I was very fortunate to work with a wonderful fisheries biologist by the name of John Eiler, and we teamed together to create a story for children on a real-time journey of one king salmon that swam from the Bering Sea across Alaska, a total of 2,007 miles. Which, as John says, it's the longest documented migration of one king salmon going to the spawning grounds that's ever been, you know, charted in science through the use of a little telemetry device that was inserted into the fish.
So you paired up with a scientist.
Yes.
And so this book is actually a really nice balance between scientific data and also narrative. Yes. Is where you come in.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about the little telemetry device. You're holding it right now. Can you describe it to us?
I'm holding it right now, and it's about an inch and a half long. It's sort of a plastic outside smooth surface. On the inside, there's a little data chip and a battery, and then extending from this little bullet is an antenna that's about a foot long. And so this is carefully inserted into the fish, into the stomach. And some people, would one child asked me, don't the fish gag, or isn't this a horrible thing? And in fact, they don't eat, during their long migration up the Yukon, or, salmon don't eat when they're swimming to their spawning grounds. So the stomach actually atrophies. And I actually, when I was doing my research, I looked at stomachs that were, halfway up the Yukon, different salmon, and they looked like deflated balloons. And so it doesn't bother the fish, where if they put the device on the outside of the fish, like on its skin, it could affect its swimming. It could, tear off. And so they very gently insert this little device, and the antenna hangs out of the mouth and just trails behind the fish in the water. And then the battery is able to send up a little signal that goes through that antenna to one of 40 towers that were set up along the Yukon. And then the towers, in turn, they beamed up the signal to a satellite, and then it was linked to another receiver in Washington, D.C. And so John Eiler was able to follow the journey of, they tagged 3,000 fish.
So 3,000 fish, and mm-hmm. This was, how long of a study was this?
5 years.
A 5-year study. And then you come in, and you're an author,
yes,
who writes predominantly children's book, and you,
yes,
say, this would be a really great children's story.
Exactly, and of course he was thrilled with, mm-hmm, the idea, and I said, well, when you're all done with this study, and I said, if you figure out, one salmon, one individual salmon that swam the farthest, with the archival information that's in this tag that, that he was able to retrieve, which he did, let's tell the story of that one fish. And so we named that fish Chinook. It was a female, and she swam 2,007 miles up the all the way up the Teslin River, the tributary of the Yukon, and then up the another tributary, the Nazutlin River, which flows into the Teslin near Teslin Lake. And then one summer, Richard Nelson and I went up to that tributary of the Nazutlin, and we canoed about 75 miles down that same river where Chinook had made her big swim, and saw the beauty of the water. It was just crystal clear. The clearest water that I think I've ever paddled through had this emerald glow to it because it was surrounded by, a healthy forest, of spruce trees and fallen trees and log jams and all the habitat that young salmon, need for rearing, and rich oxygen, water for the fish to grow in. And it was just a lovely experience to see where this fish had deposited her eggs in her red that she had built.
So you had taken a journey as,
yes,
well.
Yeah.
It seems like that might have been an important component of your creative process, because you're taking scientific data, you're translating it into narrative format to be able to put yourself in the environment she swam through.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
I guess I came away with having just a tremendous amount of respect for what salmon do. It's a miracle what they do to swim so far without eating food. And then when you consider they're swimming against a current that might be 5 or 6 miles per hour, and most of their journey they're in this mucky, cloudy water of the Yukon River, it really doesn't start to clear up till they're well beyond the Canadian border. I think it starts to get very clear. And then just to think that they're doing this feat, you know, some of them thousands of miles, you know, it kind of takes your breath away. You want to bow to them. And then to have the energy to, you know, to watch them build their reds. You know, I was able to see that, you know, fanning the gravel in the stream bed and making these little pockets. And then they can deposit anywhere from 3,000 to, I think they've gotten up to like 14,000 eggs, you know, that they'll deposit in these little pockets in their red. And then they'll guard the site, which I was also able to see, where we saw one female that was her body incredibly tattered. You know, the skin is all falling, sloughing off, and, you know, mosaic sort of pattern on her body. And she's just holding her place over this red, defending and protecting her, you know, little jewels of eggs that are underneath those rocks, those pebbles. And then she dies, you know, and just the beauty of it, there's a sadness there that we know that she's, you know, losing her life, but then we also know that that life will feed other insects and other fish, and that, you know, an eagle or a raven or a fox or a bear. And one of my favorite stories of John's is that when he went to retrieve these little tags, it was a lot of work. You know, he had headphones on and the radio telemetry equipment, the receiver he was carrying, and the antenna that he was holding in his hand. And he's hearing the, you know, the beep, 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 you know, getting closer and closer to finding these things on the ground or in the stream bed. And one day he's walking on the stream bed up on the mossy area along the bank, and he's hearing the signal loud and clear, and he's digging through leaf litter, you know, he's looking all over to find this device, and suddenly he realizes that he's at the base of this huge spruce tree, and at the top of that tree is an eagle's nest. And he goes, that's where it is, you know? So he ended up having to climb the tree, and he found it in the eagle's nest, one of these, you know. So salmon do so much for the environment. They feed so many animals, and they're the foundation of life for so many small little creatures in the river after they die. It's all a perfectly beautiful
circle. And it's all expressed in your book. And so the book traces this one particular salmon's journey in real time. And you blend scientific data with narrative. Tell us how you do that.
Well, John Eiler came up with this brilliant idea, and he said, you know, why don't we put like a little notebook, post-it note on each scene in the book that gives readers the real data. And so we did that on each scene, and there's a map showing where the fish is swimming. And then let's say on this particular scene, we're at a place called Bullfrog Island on the lower Yukon. The date is June 24th. We're on day 14 for the swim. We're at River Mile 381, long ways to go. Elevation is 76 feet. The fish's speed is 38 miles a day. The fish's depth, Chinook is swimming anywhere from 8 to 50 feet deep. The water temperature, 66 degrees.
Can you read us a short excerpt from the narrative?
And then an excerpt from this would be, Chinook travels steadily. At 1 to 2 miles per hour, visibility is poor. The river is so clouded with powdery silt that it looks like a creamy cup of coffee. The tiny silt particles make a sizzling sound as they rub against each other in the water, like the fizzing sound of soda when poured in a glass. Chinook moves along a deep, fast-moving stretch of river. Many fish are funneling through this narrow channel. Suddenly, she feels a pressure change from something in the water. She dives to the bottom to avoid the drift net of a fisherman. The net brushes the tip of her dorsal fin, but she escapes. The fishing boat continues to drift downstream.
Well, you will be at Kettleson this Saturday at 2, Sunday at 2. Uh-huh. Will you be reading more from your book and talking about the whole process?
I'll be showing images from our trip down the Nisutlan River, and that'll include some recorded sounds of Richard Nelson. And I'll probably read a couple of excerpts from the book and describe the project and lots of pictures and making it fun for all ages, hopefully.
Okay. And where is this book available?
The Old Harbor Books will also be, I believe, bringing books to the event to make them available as well. So thanks to the Old Harbor Books.
Wonderful. Yeah. We are out of time. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, no. It's just been great to be back here. It's just a beautiful Thanksgiving time that I shared with friends out on Middle Island and got out to Kruzoff Island and exploring this area. It's just magnificent this time of year and so much life. Mm-hmm. In the water mm-hmm. with the whales and otters and loons, and thoroughly enjoyed the beauty of where you live.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this
Thanks
morning.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Yeah.
Well, we've been speaking with Debbie Miller, author of many children's books, the newest one, A King Salmon Journey. Debbie will be speaking at Kettleson Library this Sunday at 2 p.m.